Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission, September 28th, 2022. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda, currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. For the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Mr. Barry. Commissioner Einhorn.
Here.
Commissioner Fusashi.
Here.
Commissioner Hankins.
Here.
Commissioner Streeter.
Here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan.
Here.
Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by a roll call. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission meeting of September 14th, 2022. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the minutes of the September 14th, 2022 meeting.
Second. Is there a second? Motion's been made and seconded. I'll conduct the roll of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the roll of the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it, and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2020-0403, Joseph Stevenson versus Angel Quiros, Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Are you there, Mr. Stevenson?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you'd like to be heard?
Yes, I would.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone there for the State of Connecticut?
Yes, Attorney LaFleur for the respondents.
Thank you, Attorney LaFleur. We'll mark that ready. Next is docket number FIC 2020-0612, Daniel Riles versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Correction, et al. Is Mr. Riles there, please? Daniel Riles? Is there anyone there from the State of Connecticut?
Again, Attorney LaFleur for the respondents.
Do you wish to be heard?
No, it's my understanding that this is a failure to prosecute, so I would just urge the commission to adopt the hearing officer's report.
Thank you. I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, the complaint failed to appear. This was dismissed at no objection of the respondent. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously.
Chairman, can I just make one quick question?
Yes.
Mr. Stevenson has spoke on the phone before the whole meeting began, and he's not feeling very well. He's not feeling well. Is there any chance we could just do his case and then move on to the rest? I think.
Sure. Let me just do the markings of all these cases.
He's first.
He is first, yeah. I'm almost done with the markings.
Okay.
So hang in there, Mr. Stevenson.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2022-0191, Roderick Lewis versus Joseph Perno, Chief Police Department, City of West Haven, et al. Is there anyone here on this matter?
Mr. Chairman, on this one, we have a signed document from Mr. Lewis saying he does not wish to be heard on this case. However, I've just learned that he is calling our office, I believe, to say that he does wish to participate. So
we'll mark it ready.
We will have to, if we want to hear from Mr. Lewis, we're going to have to figure that out as he is incarcerated.
Okay, so we'll mark that ready for
we'll see what we can do.
For the respondents, Michael Leone from the City of West Haven, and the remaining respondents. My understanding is he's withdrawn this, received a withdrawal.
Thank you. We'll mark it ready in light of what Attorney Murphy said. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0122, Greg and Jen Haythorn versus First Select Person, Town of Weston and Town Administrator, Town of Weston. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Nicholas Pomonti of Bertram Moses on behalf of the respondents. We wholeheartedly support adoption of Commissioner Hankins' report.
Thank you. Are Greg and Jen Haythorne here? Hearing nothing, I entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, seeing no objection of the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Kazeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously.
Thanks, everyone. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Next is docket number FIC 2021-0333, Nancy Burton versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Agriculture, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Nancy Burton, are you here? Is there anyone here for the State of Connecticut? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0581, Michael Picard versus Chief Police Department, Town of South Windsor, et al. Is Michael Picard here? Is there anyone here from the Town of South Windsor?
Yes, Mr. Chairperson. Julie Lavoie and Martha Kalina for the respondents. We respectfully request that the Commission adopt the proposed final decision of the hearing officer.
Thank you. Again, is Michael Picard there? And entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, seeing that the complainant is not here and the respondent has no objection, I move it up to the hearing officer's report.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fizeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Second. Oh, yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Thank you, counsel. Next is docket number FIC 2021-0594, Lisa Backus and the Connecticut Health Investigative Team versus Commissioner, State of Connecticut, Department of Public Health, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Yes, Commissioners. Elizabeth Fannin, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the respondent.
Do you wish to be heard, Attorney
General? Not necessarily. We support adoption of the hearing officer's report, and also I'd just like to add that we have complied with the order.
Thank you. Is Lisa Backus here? Is anyone here from the Connecticut Health Investigative Team? Hearing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, seeing that the complaint is not here and there's no objection to the respondent, Assistant Attorney General, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Great, and that's it for the docket. Before we consider the cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Before, I think we just have Mr. Stevenson on the line. Just to let you know, Mr. Stevenson, this matter is being recorded in its entirety, and if you wish to have access to it, it's available. It will be available on our website soon after the meeting. And if you have any issues, let us know. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that.
So,
yes, ma'am. Am I allowed to speak right now?
At this point, I'm going to ask the State of Connecticut Attorney Lepore if she has anything to say, and then you'll be able to respond.
So, yes, I just wanted to mention, before we proceed, that at this present moment, I'm a prisoner at the Osborne Correctional Facility, and I'm at a disadvantage, not only not being an attorney, but also I recently came down with the COVID and was also transferred from another facility to Osborne Correctional Facility. where I have not gotten any of my legal materials regarding this FOI hearing or the FOI matter. And I have already made complaints to the courts regarding this. So just for the record, I did receive a notice on, I think it was September 20th or so, about this hearing. Unfortunately, at the time, I was placed on what's called a behavioral observation status, which is a mental health evaluation status. And also, I'm currently in a restrictive housing unit, and I have absolutely none of the briefs, materials that I submitted. So I would have asked for an extension of time. Unfortunately, like I said, this is verifiable with the prison here. I had none of my legal materials, and I was not allowed to call the commission because of the status that I was on. So I'm not sure if it would be to my advantage if this matter could be continued, but I do not, you know, I respect the commission, commission's judgment, and I don't want to impose, but I believe at this point, whatever I have to say is really going to be very difficult without my materials in front of me. So I'm not sure if the commission wants to proceed now, or if the commission is willing to, you know, grant a continuance, because I will be transferred from this jail. I was supposed to be transferred today, but possibly tomorrow to another facility where I'd probably be able to get my legal materials. But at this point, I have absolutely nothing.
Thank you. Counsel?
Am I...
Just identify yourself.
Oh, apologies. Attorney Lepore for the respondents. Mr. Commissioner, would you like me to just respond to what the complainant has
just
stated?
Okay. His request for a continuance.
Understood. I have with me, and this is not in evidence, and I'm happy to submit it as an after-filed exhibit if you see fit, a receipt of the hearing officer's report and transmittal of the proposed final decision signed by Mr. Stevenson on September 12th. If Mr. Stevenson is in fact an RHU, a restrictive housing unit, I don't have that information in front of me, but we certainly allow offenders who are housed there to have their legal paperwork. You are not prohibited from having it simply because of your housing assignment. And furthermore, Mr. Stevenson had stated he only received notice on September 20th. That's incorrect according to his signed statement that he received it September 12th. So he has had the opportunity to review this. This case has been going on for quite some time. It is, his request is from 2020. So I would urge the commission to deny the request for a continuance and proceed as scheduled.
His request was from 2020?
Correct.
The hearing was in October of 2021?
Correct.
Excuse me. This is Commissioner Hankins.
Commissioner Hankins, yes.
Paragraph 18 states that the complainant was provided with all the records. So, you know, all we're talking about is promptness. And I don't know if there's kind of lesser than meets the eye, really, in terms of an argument. It wasn't prompt, according to the hearing officer, and all the records were provided. So I'm not exactly sure.
Permission was withheld, Mr. Commissioner, under, you know, under B-18.
Okay, all right.
But you're right. The conclusion is a promptness violation. So,
May I respectfully respond to what Mr. Lepore has said?
Yes, 1 second, Mr. Stevenson. Do any of the other commissioners have any questions or comments? Yes, Mr. Stevenson.
Yes, Mrs. Lepore is correct. I did receive a notice of this meeting and the proposed, Mrs. Ross's proposed resolution. However, the problem is not, having this. The problem is having my original briefs and so my arguments that was filed with the commission to be able to respond to what this proposal is. So having this proposal does not, you know, give me the advantage of having my legal paperwork to respond. Now, it is true that Mrs. Ross made some proposals. I do agree and I disagree with some of her proposals. For example, it is incorrect that I have been given all the materials.
One second, Mr. Stevenson.
He's getting into his arguments, which should be after turning the floor.
Thank you, Commissioner Streeter. Yes, Commissioner Streeter is correct. We're not entertaining legal arguments now or your arguments now. We're just dealing with your request for a continuance.
Yes, sir. And it is verifiable. The AG's office got notice from the I have another federal case against the DOC, and as part of that, it was made known to the federal judge that my legal materials were all kept from me since I've been in this facility, and currently I have absolutely none of my legal materials. Yes, it is true that in RHU, a prisoner is supposed to be able to get their legal materials, but the problem is they have not given it to me, and that's why I had to go to the court, and the AG's office is aware of this. And in fact, it was just yesterday, I believe, that the AG's office called this prison to tell them there is an injunction, a proposed injunction from the court, telling them to give me my legal paperwork. Now, I do have what Ms. Lepore said is in front of you, which is the proposal. You know, of Mrs. Ross. But what I'm saying is I do not have my legal materials in regard to this case. So it's going to be very difficult for me to make an argument of, you know, specifics as to, in fact, this case number, I didn't even remember what this case was for because I do have another matter before the commission that I haven't got or hasn't been resolved yet, or I haven't received any notice of that. So I was a little bit confused what this one was for. So she is correct. I do have this, the proposal, but I don't have my legal materials, my briefs and so forth for the argument. So whatever I say now, you know, to support my arguments is really going to be very, you know, it's going to be really at a disadvantage for me.
Okay.
But if the commission wants to verify that I don't have my legal materials, that's easy to find out.
No, okay. Hang on one second. If we delay this, is there going to be a problem?
No, there is no deadline on it because it was filed during a pandemic, so it's
okay. Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Attorney LaPorte.
Thank you, sir.
You wish to respond?
Sure, briefly. I'll just note that I do not have such a proposed injunction in front of me, and it's my understanding the court would not issue a proposed injunction. If the court issued an injunction, it would be an injunction. And as to his legal materials, I would imagine that the proposed final decision will be part of his legal materials. So I'm not saying that Mr. Stevenson is saying anything that's untruthful, but I am just noting for the commission that this would likely be part of his legal materials. Whether or not he has the rest, I'm not sure. But RHU permits him to have them. We have argued and briefed this case for a while now, and I would just reiterate that this has been a long time coming. Mr. Stevenson, on the receipt that he noted that he signed, it does state the docket number for this case, so he was made aware of the case, of which case was going to be dealt with today.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have anything to say?
Mr. Chairman, I would move we deny the request to postpone this hearing.
Second.
Motion to deny the request to continue has been made and seconded. Is there discussion? No, Mr. Stevenson, we're we're dealing with the commissioners right now. You don't have an opportunity to speak at this time.
Thank you.
Any discussion?
Well, considering he was successful, and we're just talking about the issue of civil penalties, I think that's not something that we would need a great deal of legal briefing from him on. So I think we could probably handle that issue.
I would confirm the argument for continuous is probably longer than the police and chief.
I'm a little bit troubled by lack of clarity about what the legal status right now is, because I don't believe, unless you can make it clearer, as to whether prisoners housed as he is right now should be entitled to have their legal materials. He asserts that there is a injunction, proposed injunction, letter from the Attorney General, some legal document that may entitle him as a prisoner in that housing unit and other to have, because I don't have clarity on that issue as to whether we are voting on something as to which there's already a legal ruling that he should have his materials, I would be inclined to vote for continuance. But I'm very open to hearing more clarity on that issue. That's the issue that bothers me. And I don't know how to, it's a factual dispute at the moment before us.
Are you requesting a response?
Well, I don't think
there's discussion on that.
No, I mean,
just put the commission.
I would
turn it to Mr. Hankins. Thank you, Mr. Fisich.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Hankins. I wouldn't open the door on what proposed injunction is. Well, there's no such thing as a proposed injunction.
I understand that.
I don't know if the injunction has anything to do with the FOI. I don't think it does. I think it might have to do with something else. But I mean, this is a clear and precise issue in front of us now. And it's not, it's precise and exact. And I don't want to say a minor issue. I certainly wouldn't want to belittle what we do. But we're spending a lot of time on a continuance where we could have been done with it about 10 minutes ago. You know, the whole case.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, too, and just looking at the decision, as Commissioner Hankins pointed out, the promptness violation. So Mr. Stevenson has won with respect to that. And the only issue, when I referenced that there was four records withheld, there are the names of the DOC employees, which based upon our prior precedent, we have found that they were exempt under B18. So it is a very limited issue where there is prior precedent. So I'm not sure how much more Mr. Stevenson could add to that. He had other materials in front of him.
I mean, this is Commissioner Hankins. It's really just the first names, you know, not the last names. So, you know.
So that's the issue that we're discussing. All right, any further discussion to the commissioners? All right, I'll take a roll call then of those in favor of denying the motion to continue. Commissioner Einhorn?
I'm in favor of denying the motion to continue.
Commissioner Fusashi?
I'm against denying the motion to continue.
Commissioner Hankins?
What Commissioner Einhorn said.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes, to deny.
And Alwyn Egan, yes, to deny the motion to continue. So we're not going to continue this case, but I appreciate your input, Mr. Stevenson. We're going to go forward, and I'll allow Attorney LaFour to begin then.
Thank you. There were really three issues that we were talking about during this hearing. The first one was whether the respondents provided all responsive records to the complainant. The hearing officer found, yes, in fact, we did. We put on testimony by Counselor Supervisor Campanelli. He went through the process by which we search for these types of documents. And in fact, there are two searches that are done, one initial one with the warden's administrative assistant, and a second one where they cross-check the inmate's master file. And I believe that the hearing officer appropriately found a thorough search was done, and therefore all responsive records were provided. Second, going into what was provided, the complainant argued that the respondents improperly redacted the first names of DOC staff. There are at least six cases from this very commission dating back well over 10 years stating that under 1-210B18, it is more than appropriate for the respondents, Department of Correction, to redact the first names of staff for safety and security reasons. These can include to prevent inmates from getting the contact information of our staff members and using that to threaten or harass our employees outside of the prison walls, which has unfortunately happened not infrequently. And also, we like to maintain a professional environment within the prisons because it is obviously needs to be a very orderly environment, and we found using last names provides that sense of order. And again, the hearing officer appropriately found that in line with the precedent by this commission, the first names were redacted. Those were the only redactions that were made. No records were withheld. The only things redacted were the first names. And lastly, as to promptness, the respondents conceded that there was a promptness violation. So really, there's no contention from me regarding the proposed hearing officer's report, and I think everything is thoroughly backed up by the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Laporte. Mr. Stevenson?
Yes. Just as an initial matter, to answer one of the commissioner's questions with regard to the injunction, I do have a copy of the federal court in case the commission needs to see it on the record.
Point of order. Hold on, Mr. Stevenson.
Is this on the record from the hearing?
Commissioner Streeter has a point of order.
Can I ask to the hearing officer, was this on the record during the hearing, this injunction?
I'm not the hearing officer. Oh, okay. I thought it was the attorney for the matter. Yeah. The exact item for the record was the injunction on the record?
Yes.
No, not to my
record. Okay. So I don't think that's allowed to be brought up at this time.
So, Mr. Stevenson, you only can address things that were brought up at the hearing itself.
Right, I understand, but there was a discussion about whether or not there was a proposed injunction or not from the federal court.
So that was with regard to the
denial.
Yes. Well, the denial of the continuance, that has no bearing on what's going on in this case, and you can only talk about the things that were discussed at the hearing in this case. All right.
Yes, sir.
Please.
Okay. Now, without any of my materials that I initially sent to the commission with my briefs and so forth, I have to just respectfully disagree with what Mrs. Lepore has said, number one, with regards to the getting all the materials requested. That is not true. I don't have my legal materials to point out, but if the commission looks at the brief that I filed, I specifically stated that there were several items that were requested that are in the possession of the DOC, which is a public agency, which was not given to me. And from my memory that I have to go by now, I know there were a lot of pictures, emails. There were, several records that were not given. And because I don't have any of my materials to look at, I would just ask the commission to look at the brief that I filed, because I specifically named some of the stuff that was missing. So I disagree with Mrs. Ross's conclusion that all records were provided. Secondly, with regards to the redaction of first names, that was just part of the issue that was disputed. Now, I would just say, just from my memory, without my briefs or anything, Section 1-2110B18, was specifically written by the legislature, in specific, clear language. And an exemption for the records must be narrowly construed. I think that's well established. And what the DOC is doing, they are using this as a cover to a blanket generalization to deny all inmates any records with the first names of staff. Now, the reason, the language is very clear. Section, that section states that disclosure is not required of records. Now, the names of these staff are not records. That language is very clear. So the precedent set of allowing the DOC not to disclose the first name of staff is a bad precedent for several reasons. It's not reasonable. Number one, it's routinely released to the press. It's released in court matters. There are resource lists in the DOC that are publicly available and also to inmates that do list the first and last names of staff. Now, a good example is there was a recent officer whose name is Vogts. I forget the first name now because I don't have my papers. And that was really, that's the press released this where this officer, committed a crime in public. Now, there was no issue with the DOC saying, oh, we can't give the first names. So I believe what they're doing is they're misapplying the statute. And I would ask the commission not to set a slippery slope, a bad precedent with these cases that are quoted, because the whole point of the freedom of information is freedom of disclosure of the activities of public agencies. And the statute clearly states that the commissioner, not the FOI liaison, not Mrs. Lepore, the commissioner has to have reasonable grounds. Now, because I don't have my brief, but that argument was made in my brief, that they have not provided reasonable grounds for each of those officers whose names were redacted. And the, it does not say anywhere in this section about the names of officers. It talks about records. So the delineation could be clearly made that a statute under the plain meaning rule that Connecticut uses must, every word of the statute must be given meaning. And the legislature would have, been very clear to specify that staff's names, first or last, are not to be released. But they did not do that. And there's a specific reason why they did that. And I give the analogy of, let's say that there are staff who were neo-Nazis. Let's say they were Nazi war criminals. And the Jewish Defense League was looking for these people. And they needed to find out if these people were working at the DOC. What sort of precedent would it set for the public not to have the names of these people? So they would be all shielded. Now, while it's true that there have been some cases that have done this, I don't believe it's a good precedent because it would not stand up in the courts or in the federal courts because names of staff are routinely released. And it's not logical. It is not logical to say that, oh, there is going to be a safety risk. That's a speculation, and the statute clearly says they must not delve. I believe I quoted some cases where the courts have said that the DOC cannot just use generalizations and make a blanket argument. They have to provide specific, reasons, and they haven't done that. They have just made the generalization. So another thing is the statute clearly states that it must be logs or other documents and so forth about movement or assignment of inmates. None of that has anything to do with the names of, staff. And I would, respectfully disagree with Mrs. Lepore also on the point that the promptness issue. This is like the second matter that I brought to the commission where the DOC has habitually flaunting the FOI Act by not providing inmates like myself with important public records that are needed for court cases. You know, this is almost 2 years that this has happened, and it's happened several times. And if I did not persevere and go through all this trouble, waited, you know, almost 2 years, this would not have come to light. So I think the commission should impose a penalty to, you know, have these people to stop doing that, because we do not have a voice as prisoners, and we rely on the Freedom of Information Commission to be our voice and to enforce the law. And to just give them a slap on the wrist is, you know, is just not right. It's not just, because it just gives them the incentive to continue doing this and continue just getting a slap on the wrist. But the other point I made, like I said, without my legal papers, it's very difficult for me to argue this. But I would say that I would ask the commission not to accept the generalized argument about, you know, that it's rational and it promotes professionalism and, you know, to protect officers. That is absolutely not true. It sounds good, but in reality, names of staff are routinely released. I mean, just think about it. We know the names of the full names of wardens. We know the full names of supervisors. The DOC's own directives says that certain officers, certain medical and custody officers, their names have to be shown. In fact, for example, staff, some staff have to wear.
Mr. Stevenson, I'm going to interrupt you. This is Colleen Murphy, the executive director. Your time, you've gone over your 10 minutes time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you please try to wrap it up for the commission?
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'm sorry. I don't mean to strain the commissioner's patience. It's just that I really don't have my legal materials. But I would just encourage the commission not to fall into the trap of setting a bad precedent and allow the DOC, a public agency, to continue using, or I would say misusing, this section to, you know, just blanket, you know, refusing to give inmates as opposed to the public. I mean, you know, you can't discriminate, you know, because the law, the FOI law, does not discriminate against inmates or the public. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Attorney Lepore.
Thank you, sir.
Briefly, just a couple of things that the complainant mentioned. He said that he stated in his brief that he identified various documents that we have not provided. There was no evidence that he put on the record that these documents exist. Furthermore, he claims that we deny all records with the first names of staff. No, we redact the records in order to provide a more open view of our records. We redact the first name so he can have the rest of the record. Furthermore, he claims that it can't be a designee, but rather the commissioner of the DOC that decides the safety and security concerns, and that's also incorrect. I believe the case was commissioner versus, of the Department of Correction versus the Freedom of Information Commission, 2008 Con Super Lexis 2724, and it says that the commissioner and his staff have the experience to know when a particular request will result in a safety risk. And we did provide at the hearing specific safety risks, safety and security concerns that we had through the testimony of Counselor Supervisor Campanelli, who has worked in the facilities for over a decade. And lastly, he claims the names of staff are routinely released. The commission has already decided this in the case of SOSA versus DOC, that's 2018-0499. therein the commission decided, even if the first names of staff are known, that the DOC can claim 1-210B18 to redact the first names. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I just say I agree with the hearing officer's interpretation of paragraph 21 that imposition of a civil penalty in this case would not be.
Any further comments? I agree as well. I think Attorney Ross is an excellent hearing officer. I would not disturb her decision. She was the person who took in the evidence, so I think she's done a good job. So with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Kizashi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Olenegan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Mr. Stevenson. Thank you, Attorney LaForce.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campanella.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
I'm sorry, may I ask a question?
Not a factual question, but is it a procedural question?
Yes. Is there an appeal procedure? Because I'm not sure if, you know, the paperwork that was sent to me doesn't provide that. I don't see it.
There is an appeal procedure. We do not typically advise on the appeal procedure, but yes, if you refer to Connecticut General Statutes, you should find that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stevenson.
Hang up now, Mr. Stevenson. Great,
thank you. Okay.
Have a great day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So we still have docket number FIC 2022-0191, Roderick Lewis versus Joseph Pernow, Chief Police Department, City of West Haven, et al.
So on that one, I've received further word that Mr. Lewis does not wish to participate.
Okay.
So you can proceed. And apologies to the City of West Haven.
Mr. Chairman, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report. Unless respondents have any objection, with no objection to respondents, I move adoption.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call on those in favor. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Kizashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Paul Egan, yes. Myself, Paul Egan, yes.
Thank you for your patience.
Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. All right. So we have item number three. Do you want to take over, Colleen?
Item number three is the consideration of the Superior Court Judicial District of New Britain memo of decision dated September 20th in the town of Avon et al. Versus Joseph Sastry et al. So this matter was argued just last week and then decided pretty soon thereafter. And I'm going to ask attorneys McGee and Miller to come up because they had a joint effort on this and just allow them to report on a favorable result.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Danielle McGee. I was counsel of record on the appeal, and Attorney Miller assisted me quite extensively with the brief writing and argued the merits of the appeal to the Superior Court. So I'll just give a little background on the case. It's not that old. You'll probably recall the facts. It involved a log created by a managerial level employee over at the town of Avon. The law contained allegations of misconduct by the then police chief. The employee brought their concerns verbally to the town manager. The town manager then went and conferred with his counsel, and counsel asked town manager to go back and ask the employee for the notes. The notes were transferred from the town employee to the town manager and then over to town council. And town council maintained a copy of those notes. With respect to the FOI case, a complainant requested those notes, that log. The town claimed that the log was exempt from disclosure under the attorney-client privilege. That issue was was adjudicated at the evidentiary hearing. Attorney Harmon was the hearing officer. She took those records in camera and concluded they were not exempt by the attorney-client privilege. By the time the case got to the commission, the attorney for the town of Avon raised a new argument claiming that the record itself was not a public record. The commission voted to table that matter, but ultimately adopted the recommendation of the hearing officer that it was in fact a public record and was not exempt under the attorney-client privilege. And town of Avon obviously appealed, and so I'll let Attorney Miller fill the commission in on what happened before the Superior Court.
Good afternoon. As Attorney McGee noted, there are really two issues that were presented and went to the trial court. First was whether that employee log was a public record, and second, whether if it was a public record, whether it was exempt from disclosure under the attorney-client privilege. Sua sponte, while the parties were briefing the issues, the trial court raised an additional issue on its own with regard to whether the town actually maintained the log. As the first issue, the trial court concluded that the log was a public record because it was both received and used by the town. Specifically, the court explained the town requested the log from the employee, who then voluntarily provided it to the town. And the court further noted that the town used the log to assist, and I'll quote, in its investigation and decision-making process with regard to the chief's employment status. The court also concluded that the log was maintained by the town, even though it was actually in the physical possession of the town's attorney, because the town still had access to it. As to the second issue, the trial court, like this commission, applied the legal standard set forth in State versus Kasuda Bagazi, although I'll interestingly note that the trial court did not cite that case, but it did use the standard in that case and concluded that the log was not exempt from disclosure under the attorney-client privilege. Of note, with regard to that issue, the court explained that a pre-existing record, which indisputably the log was here, does not become privileged simply by transferring it to your attorney. That's the highlights.
Great job.
Now we wait to see if we get an appeal. I've heard some inklings that they're considering appealing, so we'll find out soon enough and we'll update you then.
So we're obviously very happy with the decision. I think that's Attorney Miller's first one that she argued for us. She's argued many other cases before the courts, but this was her first one for us, and I think she did a really good job, and Danielle too, and our hearing officer below, of course.
Yes. Excellent job, everybody. That was a quick decision.
Yes. Yeah.
It's nice you remember the facts.
So yeah, we'll do our report on pending appeals. Want to take that away?
Sure. Felicia Harmon for the record. So I am pleased to report that the Drum versus Freedom of Information Commission, which is the cold case murder investigation of the Madison Police Department, has been selected by the Supreme Court to go on the road. So we will be at Eastern Connecticut State University on October 19th. The argument time is 11:30. It's official. I think it says in the docket that the argument is at 11, but I have insider information that the argument begins at 11. So there's going to be a first case at 10. So from 10 to 11, it's a criminal matter that's going to be at the college. And then from 11 to 11:30, they're going to have an open panel discussion in front of the students. And then our case will go forward at 11:30 to 12:30. And then from 12:30 to 1, there'll be an open panel discussion about our case. So it should be pretty interesting. We'll probably be there until 4, but who knows, right? It's supposed to end by 12:30.
Is it October 13th?
October 19th, right. Mr. Commissioner. So that's exciting. And I don't know what the first case is, but I'm sure it's a pretty exciting case as well, because they're taking these pretty exciting cases on the road. So that's that. And then we got a decision in two cases,
Which
those
to the agenda.
Oh, sorry.
But you
bet
that's all you wanted to
report. That's all I wanted to report on Drum. Yes,
okay.
I forgot about that.
Stay tuned. They'll be right back. We did get a decision in two appeals that were consolidated by the appellate. We got a decision from the appellate court. Was that earlier this week? I'm trying to think, or the end of last week. And we just had a miscommunication and didn't get to put it on the agenda. So I would ask that we add that matter to the agenda just for your consideration, and then we're going to make a recommendation about whether to appeal. It's a mixed bag, I would say. So I would ask you, if you will, to add to the agenda consideration of clerk of the Common Council versus FOIC et al., appellate court 44284, and Sebastian Giuliano et al. Versus Freedom of Information Commission et al., appellate court 44295, decided September
23rd. Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we take up two items that were not on the agenda at this time. Two court cases, clerk of the Commons, number 44284, and Sebastian et al., 44295.
Second. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call on those in favor of adding those to the agenda. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Giuseppe?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously.
So we'll pass the torch back to you.
Okay, so this case came to us, and just for background, there were complaints about the mayor for Middletown brought to the attention of the Common Council with regard to allegations of seeking political contributions in the office and some other harassing behavior. So the Common Council formed a subcommittee, and that subcommittee hired a law firm. That law firm was Claire Ryan to investigate and make recommendations. So these two cases arise out of that investigation. So in the first case, the mayor himself, who came to the hearing, I believe I was the hearing officer, he wanted all the communications between the Common Council and LeClaire Ryan. So we took those communications in camera, found the majority of them were privileged, but a portion of them we found were not privileged. So that was the first case. The second case is that someone who didn't make it onto that subcommittee of the town council wanted to, who was part of the town council, the Common Council, wanted to review LeClaire Ryan's legal bills. And they, although he was part of the client, the subcommittee disclosed a legal bill redacted. And so that person, Gerald Daly, filed a complaint challenging the redactions that were made in the legal bills. And the legal bills were interesting because they were descriptive bills, but most of the descriptive information was not redacted. What was redacted in the bills were names of employees and dates and times of meetings. And the argument was that those dates and times were attorney-client privileged, so the names of employees and the dates and times when they met with counsel were privileged, and they were also disclosure would constitute an invasion of personal privacy. So on the first case, which was the communications, like I said, we found that the majority of the communications were exempt under the attorney-client privilege, but a portion were not. And in the analysis, I had said that they don't relate to legal advice, and I hadn't gone any further. The court disagreed, found that they did relate to legal advice, and went on to continue the analysis that I never conducted. So on appeal, Attorney McGee did a really good job in that case of saying, like, if the court disagreed with the hearing officer or with the commission, then the court should have remanded the case back for the commission to conclude the analysis. Although we didn't concede that they related to legal advice, because I really don't think, if the court disagreed, the case should have come back to the commission. On the second case, Attorney McGee successfully argued that the names and the dates when people met were not attorney-client privilege. So the court, trial court had said that that information was privileged. So that was reversed. So what's interesting about the legal bill case is that within the bills are descriptions of information that the appellate court thought could constitute of records that would be similar in nature to a personnel file. So I had found that, and the commission accepted my recommendation, that the legal bills were not similar to a personnel file.
the appellate court disagreed and affirmed the trial court. But again, Attorney McGee was able to successfully argue that if the court disagreed, because that's a two-part test, first you have to have a personnel or similar file, and then if you do, you have to go and do the analysis with regard to the invasion of personal privacy. So the court disagreed and then went on to do the analysis. So what I think we have here is an unusual legal bill for the descriptions that are contained within it, but we have very successfully argued to the appellate court that, you know, our role is the decision maker first. We need to make the decision and do the analysis. Now, if we don't do that, and the basis upon which we don't do that is disagreed with, the trial court cannot go forward and make the analysis on its own. And so the appellate court expressly agreed that the case needed to come back because the trial court exceeded its reviewing, you know, scope of review. So I thought it was a good decision in that the lower court's role and where they should be in reviewing us was clearly defined. She did a great job with that. And so I think I'll turn it over to Colleen. I don't know if you want to say anything. I think that it was a really good line drawing exercise. The appellate court was very respectful of what Attorney McGee asked them to do. So I was happy with that.
Right. So I think that there are some good points to this. I mean, essentially it's been remanded. Both have been remanded as indicated, but we'll get to go back and look at the other prongs of the attorney-client privilege.
Yes.
So. Even though we aren't thrilled that in the communications case, the court said that these particular items relate to the legal advice, I think we can swallow that in this instance and then look at the other prongs. And we are thinking, although we don't have the records immediately before us, that we're thinking that some of those records may be disclosed because they won't have met the other prongs of the privilege. And then with regard to the invoices, similarly, we're not that thrilled that the court kind of with a broad brush said, oh, these legal bills are similar files, which to us in our FOI land sounds bizarre to us. But I think it's more fact driven than that. So I'm not as concerned about it as Felicia indicated. In these particular bills, there's some detail about an employee that I guess arguably could fall under that similar file exemption. And then of course the exemption doesn't end there. What we would need to ascertain then is the second prong of that exemption, which as we know is, you know, often very hard for agencies and people to get over because you have to look at whether the information would be highly offensive and whether there's any legitimate matter of concern in them. So although they're both remanded, and I do also agree that it's good that I think the Superior Court that we have right now tends to go further than need be and kind of, you know, finish the path rather than remanding to us. So I think that is good, too, that the court said you should send it back to the commission to continue their work. So we like that as well. So even though it's not a straight win, we did win on the dates and names not being attorney-client privilege. We won outright on that point. But it's not a complete win, but it gives us an opportunity to look back at both cases. It's good direction to the Superior Court below. And, you know, I think we could do some good work with it. So for those reasons, we're not recommending appeal of this, and certainly open to discussion with all of you.
Good job.
So if nobody wishes to move to appeal it, then we'll just we can just leave that without action on the agenda. And we can move on. So
thank you.
Thank you. Good job.
And we don't know if they're going to appeal either for Middletown, but
we do not know. We could be surprised.
Yeah. Possible.
We'll keep you in.
Possible too. Thank you both on that. So under executive director's report, again, we're back to in-person meetings and hearings. Relatively few pickups with that. Even after the last meeting, we were a little worried that
maybe we hadn't broadcast it well enough that things were going to be in person. We thought we might get some people after the last meeting saying they hadn't realized it and they couldn't get on, but we didn't get anything like that. And so we're back here and happy to have you all here. And things running generally pretty smoothly on that front. I think it's, I for one think it's a little more efficient, even though you all have to drive here.
Do we have any staff that just happened to call in just to hear what it sounded like, if they could hear everything?
We did test that last meeting. I don't know if we tested it today.
Yeah, last meeting and this meeting, one of our staff has it on in the office to make sure everything is being heard.
Yeah. And we do believe we have at least one or two members of the public. You know, we have that open over there to allow the dial-in. In real time. So I think when we first went on, we saw that there were at least one additional person beyond us on there. So that's all good.
It is good.
Good.
Yeah. Under general updates, I just want to make sure that you know who our two new lawyers are. We introduced them virtually to you. Kevin Munn, who is here, and Mary Kate Smith are right there. I think a number of you have met them, but in case you haven't, there they are in the flesh. We've got them working hard for us, so that's very good too. Let's see, under staff reports, just again, we're on the hunt for our secretary position. We've reviewed the 212 applications that came in for that position, and we're going to start the interview process soon on that one. The other thing I would just like to report is that we had, in my view, a wonderful celebration of our three retirees, two of whom are still here in this room, even though they've retired, for Cindy, Mary, and Tom. That was a really great night. We had a great committee that put it together, so we're all really happy with that. Commissioner Eakin, you were there.
Yep.
Mr. Hankins, you were there. It's a really nice wonderful
beautiful
night celebrating.
Yeah,
you all
did a great job.
Everybody.
We're hoping
people. They forget they retired.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so, Alicia. under legislative report. Not right now. And nothing under new business. So good to adjourn.
Thank you all.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Motion's been seconded. I'll take a roll call on those in favor. Mr. Einhorn.
Yes.
Mr. Gizeshi.
Yes.
Mr. Hankins.
Yes.
Mr. Streeter.
Yes.
And myself, Paul and Aiden. Yes. We're adjourned.
Thank you all.
Great job.